जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवरदारी, यशोधा नंदन मृज जनरंजन, जामुना छिरा वनचारी, जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टतरशत श्री श्रीमद्भिस्तुवाइन ग्रेस श्री भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की, राजग्रंथ श्रीमद्भागवतम की, संवित भक्तवृंद की गौर प्रेमानंदी। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द श्रीमद गौरीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री गुरुंग गौरंग। ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ऋषभुवाच नयाम देहो देह भजाम निलोके, कष्टान कमन अर्हते विद्भुजाम ये, तपो दिव्यां पुत्र येन सत्वम् श्रुत्य यस्मद् ब्रह्मसौख्यं त्वनन्तम्, हरे कृष्ण ऋषभ सौख्यं त्वनन्तम्, ऋषभुवाच। The Rishabhadev said, Na, not. I am this. Deha, body. Deha bhajam. Of all living entities who have accepted material bodies. Nirloke, in this world. Kashtan, troublesome. Kaman, sense gratification. Arhate, deserves. Vitbhujam, of stool eaters. Yay, which. Tapa, austerities and penances. Divyam, divine. Putraka, my dear sons. Yena, by which. Satvam, the heart. Shudyat, becomes purified. Asmat, from which. Brahmasokyam, spiritual happiness. Two, certainly. Anantam, unending. Translation of Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, Lord Rishabhdev told his sons, my dear boys, of all the living entities who have accepted material bodies in this world, one who has been awarded this human form should not work hard day and night simply for sense gratification, which is available even for dogs and hogs that eat stool. One should engage in penance and austerity to attain the divine position of devotional service. By such activity, one's heart is purified, and when one attains this position, he attains eternal, blissful life, which is transcendental to material happiness and which continues forever. Purport, in this verse, Lord Rishabhdev tells his sons about the importance of human life. The word Deha Bhag refers to anyone who accepts a material body, but the living entity who is awarded the human form must act differently from animals. Animals like dogs and hogs enjoy sense gratification by eating stool. After undergoing severe hardships all day, human beings are trying to enjoy themselves at night by eating, drinking, having sex, and sleeping. At the same time, they have to properly defend themselves. However, this is not human civilization. Human life means voluntarily practicing suffering for the advancement of spiritual life. There is, of course, suffering in the lives of animals and plants, which are suffering due to their past misdeeds. However, human beings should voluntarily accept suffering in the form of austerities and penances in order to attain the divine life. After attaining the divine life, one can enjoy happiness eternally. After all, every living entity is trying to enjoy happiness, but as long as one is encaged in the material body, he has to suffer different kinds of misery. A higher sense is present in the human form. We should act according to superior advice in order to attain eternal happiness and go back to Godhead. That's the austerity. It is significant in this verse that the government and a natural guardian, the father, should educate subordinates and raise them to Krishna consciousness. Devoid of Krishna consciousness, every living being suffers in this cycle of birth and death perpetually. To relieve them from this bondage and enable them to become blissful and happy, bhakti yoga should be taught. A foolish civilization neglects to teach people how to rise to the platform of bhakti yoga. Without Krishna consciousness, a person is no better than a hog or a dog. The instructions of Rishabhadev are very essential at the present moment. People are being educated and trained to work very hard for sense gratification, and there is no sublime aim in life. A man travels to earn his livelihood, leaving home early in the morning, catching a local train, and being packed in a compartment. He has to stand for an hour or two in order to reach his place of business. Then again, he takes a bus to get to the office. At the office, he works hard from 9 to 5, Then he takes 2 or 3 hours to return home. After eating, he has sex and goes to sleep. For all this hardship, his only happiness is a little sex. Rishabhadev clearly states that human life is not meant for this kind of existence, which is enjoyed even by dogs and hogs. Indeed, dogs and hogs do not have to work so hard for sex. A human being should try to live in a different way and should not try to imitate dogs and hogs. The alternative is mentioned. Human life is meant for tapasya, austerity, and penance. By tapasya, one can get out of the material clutches. When one is situated in Krishna consciousness devotional service, his happiness is guaranteed eternally. By taking to bhakti yoga devotional service, one's existence is purified. The living entity is seeking happiness life after life, but he can make a solution to all his problems simply by practicing bhakti yoga. Then he immediately becomes eligible to return home back to Godhead, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita chapter 4, verse 9. Janma karma chame divyam evam yoveti tattvataha chaktva deham punarjanma naiti mam eti sorjana. Quote, one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Om Agyanta Mirandasya, Giranjana Shalakaya, Chakshurun Militam Yena, Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha, Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam, Stapitam Yena Bhutale, Swayam Rupa Gadamayam, Dadati Swabdantikam, Vancha Kalputurubhyascha, Kripa Sindhu Mirevacha, Patita Nampa Venebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha, Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Brinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada Vijay. So Prabhupada says, it is significant in this verse that the government and the natural guardian, the father, should educate subordinates and raise them to Krishna consciousness. So Rishabhdev is not only the emperor of the planet, but he's also the father of all the people he's addressing. Putrika, his dear sons. There's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Evam Parampara Praptam Imam Rajashiyo Vidu. So Krishna describes how he was giving this transcendental knowledge among the saintly kings. So that's a significant point, that the knowledge was given to the Rajarishis, the people who were the leaders of the society, because they would be able to organize the society in such a way according to that transcendental information. And people, by following that, would be able to elevate themselves. There would be material prosperity, and also there would be spiritual elevation. So it is significant when Krishna says it was given amongst the Rajarishis, those who are leading the society. At the present moment, the society is led by persons who are like animals. Big animals, but animals nonetheless. So they, dharmena hina pashubhi samana, they don't consider the principles of religion as given by Krishna. So the Shastra says, pashubhi samana, they are equal to animals. And some of the animals are vicious, like tigers, lions, etc. Some animals are vicious. So then, when there's an animal society, the biggest animal wins. He governs everything. He controls everything. So having neglected the instructions of Krishna, the leaders are like animals, and vicious ones at that also. So the society is being misled. Andanya tandar upaniya manas, tepisha chantram unadam nibhada. The blind leading the blind into a, blind leaders leading equally blind followers into the ditch of material bondage, greater and greater suffering. So it is important that leaders get their information somehow, that they should be convinced. Otherwise, even whatever work the small timers do will be destroyed by the leaders whom people are looking up to or looking to with faith. That's like their Mahajans, you know, Mahajan Vakya, whatever they say is, you know, what should be Mahajana, what is that? Yeah, Mahajana, you know. Yeah, I was thinking of another verse also. Mahajano ye kahe se satyamani. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that whatever the Mahajans say, that we accept as true. So there's a purport in the sixth canto where Prabhupada is talking about how for the materialistic man, their Mahajans are something else. So they, whatever they say, they accept as truth. So if they're speaking all nonsense, then the people will accept that as truth without having to go through the process of intellectualizing, trying to understand it. They won't go through that process. Without any intellectual processing, they'll just accept whatever their Mahajans are saying is the truth, right? It's like sometimes we hear some far-out things from our Mahajans, and we don't question it, because the Mahajans are telling. Just like we were hearing the example when Mahaprabhu was traveling through South India, I think, he met a Sanandiya Brahmana who was low caste. So generally, according to the culture, the sannyasi should not eat in the house of a shudra, a low caste person. So this Sanandiya Brahmana was a low caste person. But he, this Brahmana, and Lord Chaitanya were dancing together in ecstasy. And everyone was seeing that, and they were quite amazed. Then at one point, Mahaprabhu wondered, how is it that he was so much in ecstasy? So then the Sanandiya Brahmana told him he had some connection with Madhavendra Puri. So did Madhavendra Puri eat at your house? Oh yes, Madhavendra Puri, I served him nicely, I cooked for him, I served him nicely. So then Mahaprabhu ate at this Sanandiya Brahmana's house. He didn't need any other confirmation from any other source. Because Madhavendra Puri did it, then it must be bona fide. So he accepted it. That is the nature of authority. You just place faith. So if the leadership is demoniac, people are faithfully following them, then they won't go through the intellectual processing to find out why what they're saying is foolish. They'll just accept it. And this way everything is destroyed. So it's very important that leadership gets this, you know, spiritual wisdom. So Srila Prabhupada wanted that. I was recently with a friend last night, and he had shared with me about he was struggling with a strong doubt and the presentation of Krishna consciousness, because apparently the modern scientists had created life. He was sharing this with me. And the particular, they created a bacteria, it seems, and they called it Cynthia. So he was asking me about this, and he had been struggling with this doubt for almost a year. It seems almost close to a year. So he was asking me, and I was like, well, I'm not a scientist. I don't know the various details of these things. You should talk to scientific devotees who have probably looked into this thing in detail to find out where's the defect, because it's necessarily defective, because the conditioned souls cannot surpass the four defects of conditioned life. It's not possible. He had not done that. He only had went to one devotee who was a philosopher, so he couldn't give him any proper understanding. So I mailed a couple of devotees, Madhavendra Puri Prabhu, and I mailed Mother Donna Kaylee. I have to read her mail for you. It's hilarious because, you know, Mother Donna Kaylee comes out with the bazookas from the get-go, you know. I read it to him this morning. It's completely hilarious. Mother Donna Kaylee's mood is like crush, you know. And I wrote her, and it was a very short mail. It was titled, "Do You Know About Cynthia?" And then a short mail. And she responded, I think, within a half hour or something, like a very quick time she responded, you know, with the bazookas out. And completely dismissed the whole thing and smashed it and guided us to proper articles and so on. I sent it to this devotee. So his mind has been so disturbed by this event that we stayed up until about 10 o'clock last night talking. And then I woke up around 12:58 in the morning to go to the bathroom, and I noticed he wasn't there. So I went out of the room to go to the bathroom, and I saw he was on the computer. I'm pretty sure he was looking at the mail that Mother Dad and Kaylee, I had forwarded to him. So he was up the whole night reading this thing. So anyway, my concern was that how is it that he's a devotee also, but he doesn't have a lot of association, so he's a little bit weak in terms of, you know, sadhana. And just association, you get weak without association. It's inevitable. So I was kind of curious, why is it that he was kind of almost godlessly accepting everything that was being told, as like they figured it out, how to create, how to insert life into matter. And he didn't seem to have done much investigation to see the defects into the thing. So that concerned me greatly, because, you know, he's been a devotee for a while. Although recently initiated, he's been a devotee for a while. He's a very intelligent person also. But kind of this is what the leaders are telling, and kind of without any intellectual processing, accepting. So this is the danger when leaders are not edified, then people will accept whatever they say without any processing. And then everything will be destroyed. Spiritual culture will be destroyed, and people will be converted into hogs and dogs who eat stool, living only for sense gratification, because there's nothing beyond this world. So might as well just try to enjoy the best you can. And since we're all in the Bali concept of life, we'll try to enjoy sense gratification like the hogs and dogs, and then we'll die, and that's life, you know. So it is very, it is significant in this verse that the government and the natural guardian, the father, should educate subordinates and raise them to Krishna consciousness. So this point is very significant. People are being educated and trained to work very hard for sense gratification only. So this is due to improper guidance. So in the verse itself is mentioned here, Deha Bhajam. So of all types of living entities who have taken material bodies. So the living entity refers to the spiritual soul, different from the body that he inhabits. So there's the body composed of so many chemicals, and then there's a living entity who's different from that. And they're categorized amongst 8,400,000 different species of life, of which the human beings comprise a very small portion of that. We were hearing that yesterday. There's aquatic life, there's tree life, insect life, reptilian life, bird life, mammal life, and then human life. And the human species is a very small portion. Out of all these species, the human body is very special, because in that body, one can try for self-realization. In other forms of life, you cannot try for self-realization, right? Anyone's ever seen a group of dogs discussing Bhagavad Gita or something like that? You know, those bodies don't have the capacity. Living entities in those bodies don't have the capacity, generally speaking, to transcend the conditions of material existence, but the human body does. Nirdeha madhyam sulabham sudurlabham plavam sukalpam guru karna dharam mayanu koyena nabasan teritam. What is the last line? Nataratsa atmaha bhava parandim nataratsa atma, something like that. Nataratsa atma, this is Srimad Bhagavatam. The human form of life is rarely attained. Nirdeham labham sulabham sudurlabham. Sulabham means somehow or other one comes to the human form of life, and it is very rarely attained. Plavam sukalpam, it is compared to a perfectly constructed boat. Plavam sukalpam. Sukalpam means a boat that's designed for a specific purpose. That is a very important point. Just like you have your ski boats and your yachts, these huge cruise ship type things. And so you have different types of boats. You have your rowboats and what do you call these things? Canoes? Huh? Kayak? Kayak, like that, okay. So you have different types of boats, and they're for different purposes, right? I think the kayak is meant for like whitewater rafting. You know, I don't think you want to take a ski boat whitewater rafting. I guess you could try, but I'll see you next life. Type of thing. So, you know, you have different boats constructed for different purposes. They're not all meant for the same thing. So similarly, the bodies are there, the different species of life, including the human species of life, but the human body is designed for a particular purpose. So you need to know what that purpose is, and that purpose is self-realization. That's actually what it's designed for. The human form of body is not very useful or efficient or effective in sense gratification. It's just not effective. Like the epitome of happiness on the material platform is sex life, and the human body does not have much capacity for enjoying, at least when you compare it to certain species like monkeys or pigeons, who can do sex life so many times in an hour. So many times an hour. I think I heard a pigeon 26 times having sex in 1 hour. And a monkey, anyway, not to get into the details and graphic, you know, and then the mind goes, you know, astray or something. But they're not very effective. Those bodies are very effective for sense enjoyment. Human beings cannot do like that. That is not possible. Even if they try, it's not. They should foolishly try it, it's not possible. It's not very effective. So this is the epitome of sense gratification. And the human form of body is not very useful for that. But it is useful for one thing. It is useful for self-realization. That's what it's actually built for. It's built for that particular purpose. But in order to realize that purpose, guru karna dharam, you should accept the captain of the ship, the boat. That is called as a spiritual master. Guru karna dharam. Karna dharam means a captain of the ship, a helmsman. That helmsman is the guru. Maya nukuyena nabasutaritam. And the favorable winds, which are also required to move the boat along. Right? You may have a captain of the ship and the boat is there, but if there are no favorable winds, the boat cannot navigate. So then the favorable winds are the Vedic literatures, the words of Krishna. So that is also required. So if in the human form of life, this facility is there, definitely, if one does not take advantage of it, then he is Atmaha. He is a killer of his own soul. A killer of his own soul. It means living but not living, no life. Just like modern people, they, although walking, they are without life, no happiness. That is not possible because they're killing their souls. How do you kill your soul? Because the soul is eternal. How do you kill your soul if the soul is eternal? Depriving of Krishna. Yeah, you could say that, anyone. Yeah. Yeah, depriving it of the opportunity to practice spiritual life. Anyone else? I'm just looking for realization. It's just not exactly like a right answer per se. I was also thinking by increasing its identification with matter. The Atmaha, you kill the soul. Because matter is dead, right? So the more he becomes entrenched with the material identification, the more the consciousness becomes deadened to a higher reality. And you see that. The more people indulge in sense gratification, try to talk to them about spiritual things, not interested. They become completely cut off from their actual existence, which is beyond this world, on account of increased enjoyment on the material platform. So this is where Shastra said, Atmaha, he's killer of his own soul. Like that. Huh? And this sense gratification that is so dear is available for everyone. In the human form of life, we pride ourselves from being advanced. Then we should try for advanced things which are not available to the hogs and dogs. That's the idea. That which is available for the hogs and dogs, sense gratification, in other words, we should try for something that's not available for them. Otherwise, our happiness is on the same platform. We cannot prove that our sense gratification is better than the hog's sense gratification. Because the enjoyment one the soul gets in a particular body depends on that body. So in other words, a hog won't feel happiness by eating lasagna. If you put a plate of lasagna in front of a hog, he's not going to be attracted to that. But if you put a plate of fresh stool in front of the hog, he feels this is ecstatic. This is what I'm talking about. You know, this is first class. Don't put a tosi leaf on it. Why? Why he's not finding pleasure from lasagna? Lasagna is a much nicer preparation than fresh stool. But why he's not finding happiness in that? Because he's limited, restricted by the body. So in other words, his concept of sense gratification is limited to that, and that's he's satisfied with that. So then you cannot prove that this is a more sophisticated way of sense gratification. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. The dog is having sex on the ground and someone's having sex in a, you know, skyscraper building, but finally sex. You can say, well, this is first class because there was music, there was an ambiance, there was, you know, all the... No, the dog feels actually might pity you. When I went to do sex, I just did my thing and then I went away. But you lost so much of money in the whole process. Monkey would really pity you. Huh? Prabhupada says this thing. He says when animals want to do sex life, they simply rape. That is their program. They don't have to create an ambiance and nice music and spend so much money, dress up really nice to attract. They don't have to go through that whole program. It's just like the animal would say, that's a waste of time. I want to enjoy it. Just go up and rape and then go away. And then go somewhere else, rape, go away. That is their program. Right? And we are going through this big, big arrangement for the same thing they're doing. How is it more advanced civilization? That is a joke. Rishabh Dev is telling this thing. Adrate Vidva, Kashtan, come on. And this is very troublesome. This sense gratification program is very troublesome in the human form of life. And the animal life is not so troublesome. It is nature, it is natural, right? Monkey was doing sex life. He doesn't take so much of trouble for that sense gratification. But of course they suffer too, Prabhupada mentions. But in human form of life, they have to take a lot of trouble for the little bit of sense gratification. So Prabhupada describes what is that lot of trouble. Going to work, having to travel so many hours, trapped up in a compartment, driving, and then after you get off the train, got to take a bus to the workplace. You work 8 hours. Prabhupada says 8 hours. He doesn't know about the advancement of civilization. Now we're up to 12 hours working minimally, you know, and then you come back 2 hours by travel, and then, or sometimes 24 hours, you know, getting before you join the ashram. Very miserable existence. And then you come home, and then you can eat a little something. Maybe you're doing a little sex life. You know, imagine if that wasn't there. Everyone would lose all enthusiasm for anything. And then go to sleep, and this is very troublesome existence. So human form of life is not meant for this. Human form of life is meant for divine austerity, tapo divyam. Tapo divyam means devotional service. Divine austerity means devotional service. Beginning by following superior advice. We should act according to superior advice in order to attain eternal happiness and go back to Godhead. So this is the austerity in Kali Yuga, is that we don't want to follow superior instruction. We think that whatever I feel is the authority, right? What is that? Yashastri vidim ushigya vartate kamakaritaha. The living entity throws out authority, shastravidhi. The shastravidhi is also regulated by the spiritual master. He throws out the shastravidhi, and what does he do? Kama, and he act, vartate, what is that? Yashastravidhi ushigya? Vartate kama karata. He acts according to kama. Whatever I feel, whatever I'm desiring, I do that. That is the authority. So then, in spiritual life, the first principle of development is following the religious principles given by God through the parampara for us, right? That's the first application of spiritual life. And Krishna describes that as happiness in the mode of goodness, which is experienced on the emotional platform as poison in the beginning, but in the end it leads to happiness, right? So then I've been mentioning this, that there's always this dichotomy in conditioned life between the emotional experience and the rules of religion or dharma or the guidance of superior guidance. It's this contrary picture is often there between the two, and the emotions feel very close to us, whereas the principles of religion are like abstract. They're very abstract. You know, you should do this. It will lead to eternal happiness. It's like very abstract, but the feelings are very real. So then when you have to make a decision, the general tendency of the conditioned soul is to acquiesce to the emotional experience, because that's very real. That's what Krishna calls this anarya jushtam. This is not befitting an Aryan. In the Aryan culture, they would always subordinate their feelings to the dharma, the shastra vidhi. Whatever the shastras say, we have to follow that. And although I'm feeling something, I'm not going to abandon my dharma because of that. And Arjuna was going to abandon his dharma because he was getting an emotional experience based on the realization of losing his attachment. So that created a certain mental image that was not very pleasing. It compelled an emotional investment. And then he wanted to abandon his dharma. Krishna says that's a Narya-Jushtam. That's not befitting an Aryan. An Aryan will rather tolerate that experience, right? What is that? Tam tatikshu sabharata, matra sparsha sukonteya, chitoshan sukadukada, agama apino, anityas. He will tolerate that emotional experience and subordinate himself to the religious codes for elevation. Krishna says this is experienced as poison in the beginning, bitter. So therefore, a living entity is not usually attracted to the happiness and the mode of goodness. He has to have a strong intelligence to see its value, right? And then he accepts it, and then it leads to nectar in the end. So this is a tapo divya. This is the austerity. Divine austerity means devotional service, which begins with following the order of the guru, which is usually, contradicting our desire for sense gratification. By doing that, one is shudyat, he becomes purified. This is the main thing. One will not get purified so much by doing activity under concoction. If he mental speculating about, even in devotional realm, if he doesn't follow any authority, then that still can be within the realm of mental speculation. He won't get purified by that. He has to follow authority. This is a purification. Because ultimately, it's not like we should not exactly imagine the purification in a very mysterious sort of way, like something magical is happening. In one sense it is, because Krishna's in the heart helping out. But in another sense, it's just helping to develop the mentality of a devotee, which is very simple. In happiness or distress, I'm serving Krishna. That's like the very simple mentality of a devotee. In happiness or distress, I'm serving Krishna. So in the beginning, we're not so much aware of Krishna, we're aware of the principles we're supposed to follow. And if we adhere to that strongly, then in principle, that is devotional service. In happiness or distress, I'm adhering to the dharma or the instruction. So in that way, you get purified. Or purified, let me use another word. You gain momentum in such mentality, right? Every time you acquiesce to the temporary situation, you lose momentum in spiritual development. But every time you follow that, you gain momentum in the spiritual concept. You reinforce it, that I'm a servant of Krishna. So then that's the purification that's taking place. That, okay, I wake up in the morning time, I don't want to go to the Mangalarti. The mind is saying, you worked hard yesterday, you're so tired, you know, take a load off, like that. And then, but you know the Dharma says go to Mangalarti. So if you acquiesce to the emotional experience, you lose momentum in spiritual consciousness. If you follow it, you gain momentum in the spiritual consciousness. That's the purification. The purification is a reinforcement of the spiritual concept of life. Namely, I'm a servant of Krishna. Despite all situations, I'm a servant of Krishna. That's the purification. So it's not like a very mysterious thing that's taking place per se. You know, Krishna's in the heart and removing things, you know. But it's not like, okay, now I'm going to take lust out of you and so on. It's like a very practical thing. Are you going to follow or not? Right? Krishna says this thing. Ma chitta savadurgani, ma prasada nagachati, that you'll be able to cross over all obstacles of material life. My chitta, by fixing your consciousness on me, by my mercy, my prasada, you'll be able to cross over all these obstacles. So it's not like, what is fixing consciousness on Krishna and acting? Mama nusmara yudhyacha. That is a purification, very simple. Then you start to come to the Brahma Sokyam platform, unlimited happiness. Why? Because my happiness will not be dependent upon what's happening in the external world, but rather the pleasure of Krishna. Just like sometimes a mother is taking a lot of trouble for a child. And when she sees her child smiles, it's all worth it, right? It's a wonderful experience, right? You've been a parent, most of us not parents, but we can imagine this is the case, right? That she's taking so much trouble and sometimes she wonders why she's doing so. Then the child smiles and it's all worth it, right? So similarly, it is like that. The devotee is serving Krishna and knowing that Krishna is pleased, then Brahma Sokyam, he's happy. That is a spiritual happiness, knowing that Krishna is pleased. Not coming from, I endeavored to do my service in Krishna for Krishna, and I didn't get any result, therefore I'm sad. No, knowing Krishna is pleased by the endeavor to do so, knowing that the results depend upon him, the devotee becomes happier and happier and happier as he becomes steadier and steadier in his conception as a servant of Krishna. It becomes unlimited once it becomes Krishna consciousness. When it comes to the platform of Krishna consciousness. By tapasya, one can get out of the material clutches. And one is situated in Krishna conscious devotional service, his happiness is guaranteed eternally. So getting out of the material clutches means getting free from false ego. 1.2.21 Bhagavatam. But the material clutches means the false ego, which is perpetuating our existence in the material world. And that false ego which says, this is good, this is bad, this is good, this is bad, this is on and on and on and on, causing the soul so much of misery. So by Krishna tapasya, serving the order of Guru, Vaishnavas, Hari, then he gets out of the material clutches, namely the identification with matter. And then he gains happiness by knowing Krishna's please. Like that, then he becomes eligible to return home, back home, back to Godhead. Are there any questions, comments? Yeah.
Hare Krishna. I was thinking one tapasya that's particularly difficult, even though physically we may surrender our body to the activity and to the service, it's very difficult to bring the mind to Krishna, or bring the mind to the service, or bring the mind within, like, you know, into what we're doing. So how, I'm just wondering, you were saying how when you surrender to the spiritual principle one time, then you gain momentum like that. So I don't know if you could maybe share some advice on how do we perform the austerity of bringing the mind to our service and bringing the mind to Krishna, so that it becomes strong and so that we can actually do it repeatedly and it's not so difficult.
Well, in the beginning, as Krishna presents it in the Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning it's just performing the activities. There isn't so much mental strength per se, because there isn't strength in knowledge. See, unless there's strength of knowledge, the mind isn't going to be detached from matter. Unless there's strength and knowledge, the mind won't be detached from matter, right? That's the so long as the mind is not detached from matter, then disturbances come up, you know, in the form of the onslaughts of happiness and distress. So how does he get the knowledge which will create the detachment from matter? Krishna says he has to perform the activities, right? Karma yoga, right? With the view of gaining that realization. And also giving up the fruits of those endeavors, whatever it may be. Buddha yoga, in other words. So he has to do that thing, which is not done with mental control so much in the beginning, because he doesn't have the strength and knowledge. But he's pursuing that actively. So in devotional service, first it's just the activities, right? A devotional, but strictness in the activities. That's the first, you know, let's say, installment. Strictness in the activities. And the mind isn't, again, because it's poison in the beginning, I have to follow so many rules, etc. Hare Krishna, sit up straight. Otherwise, there's no use in speaking if you doze. It becomes a useless affair. You know, if you're going to ask a question, at least stay awake to hear the answer. So then, first, there must be strictness in the activities. Otherwise, the mind is not going to cooperate because it's poison in the beginning. I have to follow so many rules. The mind is frustrated about that, etc. So he just follows the activities. And as he's, because he's doing that, like I said, getting momentum in the right conception, and gradually his knowledge increases. When the knowledge increases, it creates detachment from matter, which means detachment from, I like this, I don't like that. It becomes less significant for you. Right now, it is very significant for us. I like this, I don't like this. That's very important for us. Therefore, mind is always disturbed, because then the authority would come and say, do this, do that, and then immediately be against our plans, and we become angry and upset. But as you follow that, you become less detached by saying, this is what it is. This is what it's got to be. Right now, we're thinking, it doesn't have to be like this. I can be the controller. I can be the enjoyer. But as you stay fixing those activities, and then every time you make a plan, someone comes in and disturbs your plan. You make another plan, they disturb their plan. You make another plan, they disturb their plan. Then you realize this is the way it is. So then you become detached from the idea that it has to go my way. You know, you become more detached. Like, okay, this is just the way it is. This is the reality. And once you can accept the reality of things, that detachment comes up. Once you, this is knowledge. You know what it is. It's the reality. You become detached from, it's got to go my way, and then the mind will start to be easier to control. It will still go in the beginning until you're in samadhi, it will still go. But you will become detached from the movements. So of the mind. Right now, when the mind goes, we're very attached. Like, the mind gets an angry experience, we just go along with it. You know, if it gets a happy experience, we go along with it. But the devotee will become neutral. This is the first point Krishna mentions in transcending modes of nature. He'll become neutral. That doesn't mean exactly devoid of emotion. It means neutral to the material experience and so on. Then he'll be able to fix his mind. So then Krishna speaks about yoga system. You know? Then after he fixes the mind, his devotion will become deep.
So one thing I've noticed is that when the mind is bewildered or experiencing some strong emotional state, not only do you forget what you're supposed to do, but what you're not supposed to do starts becoming very reasonable. Like, the mind will start giving you reasons to believe that if you do this or if you do this, those are perfectly reasonable options. So it's almost like you get a little, kind of like Arjuna, he starts thinking, if I don't fight, and then he finds really good reasons why he shouldn't fight. So I was thinking that that can be a little bewildering. Like, you're trying to do a service, the mind gets agitated, and then abandoning service and doing something else becomes very reasonable.
So don't abandon service. You know, time to take for Sabharata. I always say these types of questions are all summarized in that one verse. You know, generally we tend to try to give really clever answers and like really deep and insightful answers for all these like mental questions. You know, why am I mental, in other words? But Krishna summarizes all the answers that could, all the questions that could possibly come up. Krishna summarizes it in one verse. Tam to tiksha sabharata, learn how to tolerate without being disturbed. Next question. You know, and then after that he goes into a discussion about the jiva tattva, you know. Alright, tam to tiksha sabharata, if you do like that, you'll get liberation. And then jiva tattva discussion. You know, he moves on. You know, and we're like, wait a minute, but I have another question. My mind is doing this, and tam to tiksha sabharata, next question. And then another devotee asks, well, you know, sometimes I feel like this, tam to tiksha sabharata. Anyone else has a question? Well, you know, I was thinking like this, thinking about the devotee, and it made me very discouraged. Tam to tiksha sabharata. Anyone else? You know, it's like really, although we try to look for clever, kind of mechanistic things we could apply and so on. Like we were hearing yesterday, spiritual life is not about that. Gokulananda Prabhu was explaining, Krishna teaches Rishabhadev is going to come out, learning how to tolerate happiness and distress. It's absolutely essential. Otherwise, the mentalness will never stop. It'll be it's like a black hole. You know, I don't even know if these things exist, but we grew up watching television and hearing these things. You know, and whatever you put into it, it just sucks it up, you know. Like that. So when a person's very mental, you can give him best advice. He'll just suck it up and then another one and another one. There'll be no end to that. So Krishna also knows that, so it's time to tukul sabharata. Any other questions? You know, like that. Any other questions? Yeah.
We have two questions. The first is the follow-up part of Himanshu Prabhu. You told that for the knowledge to get from detachment, we need to do our activities. And we need to bring the strictness in that activities, right?
Yeah, so, well, Prabhupada says that in NOI, you know, if you were strict, it would be easier to advance.
So Prabhu, it's very difficult to be strict in the neophyte level. So how can be the submission is a good way? Submission to the devotees or submission in the sense everything, you know, what we do, just try to listen to them, try to hear them, try to serve them. It's a good way to bring a strictness in the life initially.
Well, I think to do that, you have to be strict. It's very hard to follow whatever the authorities say, this, that, you know, that is self-requires.
I'm not talking about authority also. I'm talking about the simple, let's say, our brahmachari's family. Mm-hmm. Let's say if someone is telling, Be submissive and feel that you are a fool. Is it a good way to start rather than being strict that, okay, no, this is my way of living? Because I'm always doing like this. This is my way of living. This I am doing, you know. I am doing this. So instead of being that, can we...
Of course. Obviously, you know, to be more submissive is better than being adamant about one's own position. That's always a... Even if sometimes you're right, it's usually a better course because it'll help engender a better mentality in the future. Now, even if you feel that you are right, you know. But this is very perfectly reasonable. And some of the authorities told like that, if you just kind of submit to it, it helps to engender a more humble disposition, which is useful for devotional service. Like that, so, I mean, of course, that is always a better thing to do. But then to stick to it requires strictness. That stick to that mentality is not very easy. It's like sometimes someone's like doing something to annoy you. Like, let's say like poke you and doing something like this. You know, and they just keep doing like this. And in the beginning, you might be tolerating, like a kid's doing something like that. And you might just be tolerating. And they keep doing it, and they can kind of see you breaking down a little bit, you know? I'm getting a little upset, and then they keep doing it. So it's something like that. You try it out, but to maintain that mentality requires a certain strictness. Because, you know, sometimes you feel like you have a breaking point. And so it's not easy, in other words. But it's always certainly better. Because it's the process. Okay. Yeah.
Is you gave the how to obtain Brahmasukhyam, unlimited happiness, that mother taking care of child, even and she's getting lots of trouble taking the child, and when the child smiles, she feels happy that, okay, she's satisfied that my service is okay. Similarly, when you do something for Krishna, I mean, see Krishna is happy, but it's very difficult to see in the neophyte state that we feel that, okay, we've seen the Krishna, oh, wow, Krishna is looking, he's very pleased, I've cleaned the temple floor, I've done great books today. So, how to contemplate this thing without looking at the Vaishnava's family, Brahmacharya's ashram, that how to look at that, okay, this devotee, the other way to see how Krishna is happy is to see how the devotees are happy with us, right? So, we can go and ask him, Prabhu, are you happy with me? Because it's... You know, it happens to me many times. I want to ask Prabhu, am I doing okay with my life? Is anything going wrong? And I usually ask to Luke Prabhu sometime, Prabhu, please chastise me if I'm doing wrong. So,
hey, yeah, I mean, you could take that as an indicator. I think Prabhupada also gave that answer to Jayadvaita Swami once. How do I know the spiritual master is pleased with me? And Prabhupada said, you will know because all the devotees will be happy. Something to that effect. I think remember hearing an answer like that. And should I go and ask the devotees? I guess you could and see what they say as an experiment. Of course, most of the devotees may not be, because everyone doesn't interact with everyone very closely. So they may just give like a very general answer. So generally it's useful if someone who's interacting with you more closely. Understanding. But another way of seeing it also is that, like, for example, if a spiritual master or authority gives you an instruction, and you follow that, certainly he must be pleased, right? Certainly he must be pleased. If you're following it strictly to the best of your capacity, then why he should not be pleased? So something like as simple as chanting 16 good rounds and following the four regs, for starters at least, certainly spiritual master is pleased. You know, we're always trying to think, well, only if I deliver all of Chicago will the guru be pleased. No, he wants you to chant your rounds, you know, and follow the four regs. That would be very pleasing to the spiritual master also. You know, for starters. And if you get very specific instructions, which is usually rare, but if you do get it, then you follow those things, then why the spiritual master should not be pleased? Why Vaishnavas would not be pleased that you are serving sincerely in that way? And that way the devotee will feel happiness, that he's taking trouble, but this is what my spiritual master has told me to do. So knowing, doing what I was told to do, certainly it is pleasing. So he feels happiness knowing that I'm serving. Just like sometimes, we know very well when we're doing sense gratification and when we're doing service. Many of us know very well the difference. And Krishna says in the Gita, knowing very well, they know very well the difference between the two. And when you're in a more service mood, don't you feel happy? Automatically, you know, and it'd be like a lot of difficulties coming up. But because you're fixed in the service, you feel a happiness that it's just like the happiness you feel by being responsible, right? Most of us may, aside from Daita Prabhu and maybe Ashraya Prabhu, a few others, maybe mostly irresponsible person. But then when you finally like did something really responsible, you feel like you accomplished something, isn't it? You know, like if you were told, can you give me this paper at, you know, 8:50? And you gave the paper at 8:50, you feel that you accomplished something very nice, right? Because you were responsible. So it's something like that, that feeling, that I was told to do like this from Guru. I understand that's the order of Krishna coming down. And I did like that. So you feel happiness knowing they must be pleased because I followed. I acted responsibly as opposed to whimsically. So there's something like that that I was mentioning. You know, we may or may not always be able to get like the face confirmation. Are you pleased with me? You know, sometimes it happens. That happened to me one time. You should not look for these things, though. You should just do what you're supposed to do. One time when my spiritual master was coming recently, you know, when he was here last, and I went to greet him outside to give garland, and no one happened to be there. Gokulananda had left to Mexico that time, I think. And so only I was outside to greet him that time. Lucky me, I was happy about that. And it was cold also. It was really windy. Anyway, I went and greeted him and gave a garland to him. And when he got out of the car and he embraced me, and he said, "I'm so proud of you." You know, and it was like very, like, wow. I didn't do anything special, you know, to get that, you know, mercy. I didn't do it like anything very significant. I'm struggling like anything here in Chicago and so on. And so like that, he gave some encouragement, mercy. But we should not, like, you were, like, expecting that. I never expected that. You usually expect the sauce. That is a good thing to expect.
I like your point that don't look for anything. Just go on with your service. Unless you feel that you are right, you are doing something good. Unless you are feeling that you're not going beyond the certain rules and regulation of our Krishna consciousness movement, then go on with your services, and automatically, if you're following the guru's instructions and authorities, everyone will please. And suppose if somebody is not pleased, then that Krishna will make the situation arranged.
Feedback. You know, don't think that feedback won't come up sometimes, or a particular interaction which causes a particular, you know, things to come out. Expect that to happen and then adjust accordingly. Don't think that feedback shouldn't come. Or anyway, I'm following the order of my guru, so I know he's pleased, so the hell with whatever you say. You know, you should expect that sometimes feedback might come up. And that is Krishna helping you to adjust your services like that.
Feedback is not too good. If a devotee, suppose let's say one or two devotees are not satisfied with what we are doing, or some situation comes, we should not try to resolve it, right? Because we know that what we are doing is right.
No, that's what I'm saying. If the feedback comes, you should consider it and then try to adjust accordingly. We shouldn't just dismiss it. You know, maybe Krishna's inspiring them to say like that to us for our edification. So we shouldn't just dismiss it thinking, oh, I know what I'm doing is good, so, you know, you people are just ignorant, you know, you don't understand. We shouldn't dismiss. They're devotees. So Krishna may be inspiring them to address something in us, so we should consider it. You should consider what is being told and think, oh, maybe that is right, actually, like that. In the beginning, we'll be maybe a little agitated, you know, but cool off and then consider. Like that, that's what I'm saying. Okay, so Ratak, you want to say something final? Yeah. I still can't feel my fingertips. Yeah, it's been a whole 24 hours. I don't know why that is.
Hare Krishna. So as long as we are embodied, you know, no matter how much advances we make, we're still going to, like, experience, the urges of the body, no matter how much spiritual advancement we make, just being embodied.
Yeah, I mean, Prabhupada does say that in several places. I mean, what comes to mind is Ramanacharya saying, I'm experiencing newer and newer tastes in Krishna consciousness. And when I think of sex life, I spit at the thought. So sex life, he's thinking of it, right? It still comes up in his mind. But he spits at the thought, so that's the important
point. When the thought comes up.
Yeah, when the thought comes up, he spits at it. He doesn't... So that is the difference between Ramanacharya and maybe ourselves, you know. The sex life thought comes up and you look like you were chanting a very blissful japa. I was. You know, so that is not very good. But Ramanacharya, so he was very advanced devotee. And he said, Nava Nava Rasa, I'm experiencing newer and newer tastes. But when the thought of sex life came, he spit at it. Jai Keshava Prabhu always has to say to this point, if it was us, there should be a huge pile of spit increasing, you know. You know, practically the whole job appeared. And everyone comes into the temple room like, so much spit on the ground, what's going on? And they said, well, I'm not experiencing Nava Nava Rasa, it's not coming. But I'm just practicing this exercise of spitting at the thought, just so that hopefully one day I can do it in truth. Okay, so like that. Srila Prabhupada, Kija.